Hello and welcome to RegieState.com, podcast number 30. Holy Time Warp Batman. Adam West and Burt Ward reprise their roles as Batman and Robin in the animated movie Return of the Caped Crusaders, as campy Batman has returned. Is it worth watching? Lucasfilm and Disney revealed the official title to Star Wars Episode 8. Speaking of Lucasfilm and Disney, they did something they normally don't do, address rumors and speculation, and for good reasons. Join myself and my co-host, James, for this, our first podcast of 2017. But first, unfortunately, we're going to start off with just a small bit of sad news. I guess it's not really small, but anyway, legendary television actress Mary Tyler Moore, who is best known for her roles on The Dick Van Dyke Show as Laura Petrie and The Mary Tyler Moore Show as Mary Richards, passed away on January 25th at the age of 80. Moore's family said she died due to cause of cardiopulmonary arrest after she had contracted pneumonia. We here send our condolences to her and her families. How you doing, James?
Pretty good. Speaking of Mary Tyler Moore, I just want to point out the Mary Tyler Moore Show is actually the first, at least American TV show, which starred a single female professional.
Yes.
It wasn't the first show to star female, obviously. I mean, you had I Love Lucy, but this was the first one to show someone who wasn't a wife, wasn't a homemaker. She was a professional and
wanting to make her way in the world.
There were episodes where she would argue with
her boss.
And she'd argue about the pay, that she's not getting paid enough because she's a woman, and right. Brought up all these, it really was like a very feminist
social commentary at the time.
Sure. And well, we say at the time, but
it still exists in some forms.
It does. Yeah, it's pretty interesting. It was a good show. I was surprised that she was that old, but I guess they're all getting old now, aren't they?
Yeah.
She was 80.
Yes, 80. But it was sad to hear that news. It seemed to be more prominent in 2016. A lot of people seemed to talk about, oh my God, this person's passed.
And you know, I kind of got tired of the cliche that 2016 is the worst year ever, because I would argue that there were years in the Middle Ages that were probably worse. If you think 2016 was bad because all your beloved musicians, actors, and all these artists and scientists and sports heroes, all your heroes, a bunch of them died in 2016. Guess what? They're still getting older. They're still going to keep dying. I mean, that generation, most of us,
the baby boomers,
looked up to
old.
The baby boomers and the ones that, yeah, they're getting old. You know, there were a few that died this year that, you know, like Anton Yelchin, obviously, but for the most part, most of them were over the age of 50. And that's just kind of life,
unfortunately.
Yeah, it sucks. Like, I was sad when David Bowie died. I was sad when Prince died. You know, I was a big fan of Muhammad Ali when I was a kid. I wasn't super sad when he died, partly because I was kind of surprised he lived that long. He had Parkinson's so bad.
Right. I think it was just he was so beloved by so many.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, yeah, like, I'm not trying to downgrade that. I was just, yeah, it didn't affect me in the same way.
I get you.
Carrie Fisher really made me sad. That one was really sad to me.
Oh, but yeah, because in you're an eyes world, so to speak. I mean,
she was making a comeback.
Oh, yeah. She was
huge
making
comeback.
And
did you know she was a voice on Family Guy?
Yes.
A regular voice. Yeah.
Played the boss of Peter Griffin, Angela. I don't know if you listened, but just as I was getting ready to put out podcast number 29 is when she died. And so I ended up, I don't know if you've listened to the beginning of that, but I made an extra addition to that podcast and put something at the beginning of that, and then put about a 10-second silence in there, and then went ahead and let the podcast that we had recorded, you know, about review of Rogue One, then start up afterwards. So
that's great. I'll listen. I haven't yet, but I will listen to it.
Yes, I was going to put that out, and it's like I ended up making an addition, so I ended up not putting that podcast out till like a few days later than I was intending to, just because, like, okay, we're talking about Rogue One, of them digitally recreating Carrie Fisher for what she looked like in The New Hope, and I didn't want to just put that podcast out and not at least address it somehow.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that was the Rogue One podcast, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, it's just right after the movie, and right after it showed her digitally enhanced. After she died, that last scene really became more profound.
Speaking of Rogue One, real quick, it has now officially crossed the $1 billion mark in worldwide sales. It's the fourth or fifth movie to do so in 2016 officially.
You know, I think that might be, honestly, I know it doesn't count in the main series, but as far as counting any Star Wars movie, so there have been some other spinoffs. If you'll remember, the Clone Wars was a movie, technically.
Yeah, that's how they kind of debuted the
Clone Wars. Wasn't that just a pilot?
that was kind of more or less taking what would probably would have been broken up into basically the first three episodes of what we'd consider a pilot or just a long TV movie to introduce a series.
It was just a cash grab to throw it in the theaters. Should have been on TV.
It was
right?
Lucas's way of saying, hey, you know, Clone Wars, I didn't really mind it so much, and I don't think they really let it stay out in theaters that long. It was more or less,
I didn't like it, but then I started liking the cartoon when I started watching it. I think putting it in theaters was kind of a mistake, because I didn't know it was a pilot, and then the fact that, oh, it's a pilot for a cartoon, okay, and... Well, when you put that into perspective.
But. Anyone who's a fan of the Clone Wars animated series, anyone knows that first season is slow and kind of somewhat hard to get through. Mm-hmm. But once you get past that first season and you start getting into the later season, it really did come into its own and really become a really good animated show. And slowly kind of got away from the kid factor a lot. Yeah. And it became more of a, yeah, it was animated. It was for kids. It was a cartoon, so to speak. And they still maintained a little bit of that.
It more serious.
But it became more where, it definitely became more adult friendly,
like the Batman animated series.
Right.
Yeah,
it became really good.
I'm gonna say, out of all the Star Wars movies, and that includes spinoffs, I think this one might have been maybe the fourth best one, maybe even the third best.
If you take all the movies up so far, including Rogue One, I have it as ranked number three. In
Before
my list.
Return of the Jedi?
Yes.
Like, I'm guessing, because yours is probably
Empire,
New Hope.
Rogue One.
I think I would do that too. I have a nostalgia factor with Jedi, but I think I can go ahead and bump it.
And in all honesty, I could almost put The Force Awakens almost above Return of the Jedi.
They're pretty close.
To a certain extent.
They're pretty close. In some ways, The Force Awakens is a better movie, but in some ways, The Force Awakens has some...
The Force Awakens was basically fan service.
Yeah.
To get you re-energized.
It has a little too much fan service.
Make you forget the prequels, and I can understand why they did that. Yeah. I mean, the prequels left such a bad taste in so many people that they, regardless of whether or not it was too much fan service or followed A New Hope a little too much in story arc and everything else, I think they did it for a reason and intention, and obviously it paid off because, I mean, how many movies actually come close or hit the $2 billion mark?
I kind of think you can slap Star Wars on any... Well, I mean, I guess this one only did $1 billion. So.
Right, but it's also still not done
so
in its
modest.
theatrical release, but yeah.
You know, I need to go back and watch Force Awakens. I saw it a couple times in theater. I really liked it. I thought it was a good movie. I have some friends who didn't like Kylo Ren. I think they're wrong. I thought Kylo Ren was a really good character.
I think
if he's a little whiny, but we have two more movies to go. No. Let him flesh out.
Oh yeah, I think
like
he's really
don't make your full judgment on him right now. Like I think he's a great character. I really like the idea that when he's got the mask, he's almost a different person than when he takes it off. And
right.
It makes sense to me. I mean, he's a spoiled kid. His grandfather was
Darth Vader.
Master,
for some reason,
murderer.
He idolizes.
He's basically the cult of Darth Vader, him and his followers.
Batman: The Return of the Caped Crusaders, animated movie. Came out digitally to be watched in October, didn't come released to physically get a copy until November. You and I are just now kind of getting around to watching this. Mm-hmm. What do you think of the movie?
Well, in the movie, as you say, it stars Adam West and Burt Ward as Batman and Robin. It also stars Julie Newmar as
Catwoman.
I liked it. I thought it was funny. Like, it's not supposed to be taken seriously. In a way, it almost felt like
an homage, and yet they never really left.
It's got all the characters from even, what's her name, the aunt?
Aunt Harriet.
One thing I loved about Aunt Harriet, and there's a lot of winks and nods in the movie, and there's a little bit too much almost, but at the same time, it's based on a show that was like so dumb you can't help but wink and nod. I'm sure when the show came out, I could never tell if that one was tongue-in-cheek on purpose or if it was just dumb. Like, you really can't tell.
Mm-hmm.
But this new one, it's definitely tongue-in-cheek, and it has a lot of like little winks, like Aunt Harriet... She almost says it a bunch of times, but she doesn't say it. She keeps alluding to the fact that Bruce and Dick
are
gay. She's like, oh, I know you keep going on your fishing trips. And she's like, you're so secretive. And she's almost saying they're gay. The reason why And then she says something towards the end. She's like, for a minute there, I thought I was just here for appearances. What that joke is all about is because in the show, you know, there was that book written in the 50s, like The Death of Innocence or something ridiculous like that. Can't remember offhand, but any comic book fan knows this book and knows it was about a guy who criticized comics and stuff like that. Heavily. That's why there was a comic book code enforced after this. Well, the big criticism was that Batman and Robin were gay and they were teaching our kids to be gay. Now, it's really hard to argue against Batman and Robin being gay. They're pretty darn gay. There's a lot of panels where they say things to each other and you're just like, wow. But like at the same time, it's like, who cares if they're gay? I know it was the 50s, but I mean, come on. And see, like, do you really think that reading comics with weird accidental homoeroticism is going to make a child gay? I find that hard to believe.
And how many of the kids would actually pick that up?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So anyway, Aunt Harriet was put on the show to make them seem less gay. I don't know how that was supposed to work because she's his aunt, but whatever. Mm-hmm. It was just to add a female touch to the whole thing. So she was just there for appearances. In this particular show, she thinks they're gay, which is really funny.
Now,
that's also why Batgirl was introduced.
Oh, to help.
And Batwoman. There was a Batwoman.
To help offset the whole appearance. Mm-hmm.
Which is ironic because if you remember during the New 52, there was a Batwoman comic, which I think was like one of the best ones out of the New 52, which there is no New 52 now. They revamped it again. Batwoman was a lesbian.
Aha.
So, which is like ironic that originally she was written to make Batman seem less gay, but in the modern version, she's gay. We did a podcast on that. If you haven't heard it, you should. That one was one where we got a little social. Yeah, there's a lot of winks and nods. Batman, like, turns evil or something, and, well, like, he disappears out the window, right. And they're like, that's not like him.
Well,
just
gonna
disappear on
us. I was going to bring up that the first 20 to 25 minutes of this movie is almost like watching one of their episodic shows from the 60s. And you're thinking, okay, where are they going with this? Because they've captured, you know, Joker, Penguin, Riddler. What are you going to do? And then takes that twist where when Catwoman scratches him on the cheek, actually starts taking effect and he goes rogue or starts turning to evil and starts cloning himself with that duplicating gun. And when it got to that point, it's like, okay, they found something unique and different to go with this, because if you really watch, if you'd ever seen the trailer they put out for that, most of the trailer was taken from the first 20, 25 minutes of the movie. So they didn't give anything away of what the actual plot of the movie was. So as I'm watching this, I'm like, oh, this is ingenious. It's like you completely throw in a twist on Batman and you never saw it coming. And I actually think it kind of worked for them.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I think in an actual live action movie, I think it'd been kind of stupid. But as far as the animated part of it, I thought it really worked.
Oh, and it was a comedy, too.
Yeah, right. I mean, and I loved it. To me, a lot of the 60s Batman TV shows, to me, a little can go a long way.
Yeah.
Watch 2-3 episodes.
Well, remember how most of them were two-parters?
And
like,
they also
come
aired
on.
They,
like,
also
why?
Aired, they also aired in the same week.
Yeah.
A lot of times, that's why a show that only ran 3 seasons has over 100 some episodes in it, because they would do the first part on one night, and then the night or the next night after that, ABC would run the second part. So you're getting both parts in 1 week instead of having to wait week to week to week. So you got basically two episodes a week.
What was that scene where he and Robin start fighting and they yell all the stuff that they throw, and it's like bat knife, bat shield,
oh yeah,
bat spray, bat this, and it was pretty funny. Like, everything they're throwing at each other was a bat something.
Well, how many different sprays can one Batman have for antidotes and everything else and repellent?
Oh, remember, he had a shark repellent in the
right
movie. I didn't really start liking the 60s Batman until I got older. When I was a kid, I thought it was the stupidest thing in the world.
Because
when I was a kid, we had the Tim Burton movies, which were good. You know, I know the Schumacher movies sucked, but this was before the Schumacher movies came out. I was probably like second or third grade. A, we had the Tim Burton movies, which were really cool. And B, we had the animated series, which was really good. I mean, that cartoon, it's kind of a game changer for animation. It really was. Like, it was so serious and well done. And then I saw the old 60s show, and I was like, what is this? This is so stupid. But when I got older, I started liking it. I still don't totally get it. Is the show meant to be funny, or Is it just really stupid?
For me, when I was a kid, and when I say kid, I'm going to say under 12 years of age. And this was before Tim Burton's Batman was even thought of. I'd see that Batman movie they did. It'd come around somewhere during the holidays, Thanksgiving or Christmas. And when I was at my grandparents', all the adults are doing their thing. And they don't want you being around, you know. So you had to find something on TV. So at the time, I kind of thought, oh, hey, Batman's on. Cool. I'll watch this, you know. So at the time, I thought it was cool. But then as I got older as a teenager and then when Batman came out with Michael Keaton, you know, I was 18. Okay, this is what Batman's supposed to be. And that's when I started, okay, the 60s Batman just sucks, period. It took for a while because I wouldn't even watch the 60s Batman show for a long time or the movie because it's just like, oh, please give me a break.
The thing is, though, history repeats itself because when Batman Begins came out, all of a sudden I was like, oh, man, the Tim Burton Batman movies suck, too.
Yeah.
So I quit watching them for a while. And it's like, no, they don't. They're not as good as this, but they don't suck. They're still pretty good.
But for when they came out and for what they did,
like they have their problems, right? But they're still decent.
Oh yeah,
both of them are. Also, speaking of that old movie, that one did not have Julie Newmar. That one had Lee Meriwether.
You know,
and I did. That was going to be my segue. You ruined it.
Sorry.
Reggie thinks. No, I'm kidding. But when they cloned.
He started seeing.
Duplicate. Yeah.
What happened? He sees triple. They put
and it's
likeness,
all three of them.
It's their way.
Julie Newmar.
Lee Meriwether.
Lee Meriwether and Lee Mayweather, excuse me. And Eartha Kitt.
Yeah. But I saw that, and it's like, okay, that's
their
way of paying homage to all the cat women.
Well, her and, of course, Julie Newmar are the only two living villains, because Eartha Kitt's dead. Cesar Romero and all the others are dead.
All the villains are dead. So,
did you notice they also had cameos of all the other stupid villains that were on the show, like Egghead and King Tut?
Yes.
And I think Mr. Freeze was on there.
What did you think of the voices they did for Penguin, Riddler, and Joker? I thought were pretty spot on.
I thought they were good, too. Actually, at first, I thought Riddler was voiced by Stephen Colbert. Then when I saw the credits, he wasn't.
No.
He sounded kind of like him.
Jeff Bergman was the Joker and the announcer. William Slayers was Penguin. And Wally Winger was
Riddler. I'm not familiar with.
Jim Ward played Commissioner Gordon. Stephen Weber.
Is that Burt Ward's son?
I have no idea. Stephen Weber was
Alfred. Do love how Burt Ward sounds like such an old man, but he's playing that teenage boy.
Oh, yeah. That scene you're talking about in the television studio where they brought back Mr. Freeze, the Mad Hatter, False Face, King Tut, Bookworm, the Archer, the Minstrel, Ma Parker, Egghead, Shame, the Sandman, Siren, Clock King, and Louie the Lilac.
You know, most of these characters weren't even in the comics. Mr. Freeze was, Mad Hatter was. I don't know if Clock King might have been. I know he was on the animated show in the 90s, but like Egghead and King Tut were totally new. Although, while there's no King Tut, there is a character just like him called Maxi Zeus, only instead of thinking he's King Tut, he thinks he's Zeus, which is equally as stupid. Egghead, if you remember, he was Vincent Price.
Yes.
I love Vincent Price. Too bad he got to be the stupidest Batman villain ever. His thing is eggs? Really? That's his thing?
But then again, it was the 60s. There was one reference towards the end of the movie.
Yeah, I knew you would like it.
I loved it. I backed it up and watched it a second time because, like, wait a minute, are they referring to what I think they're referring to? And when they basically confirmed it to me, I sat there and
I'm talking about the sipping tea in a cafe in Europe.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I love that. Because it's a reference to The Dark Knight Rises from the end of 2012, which you know I have issues with.
What does he say? Holy unsatisfactory ending, Batman?
Yeah. Catwoman says, I'll turn myself in on one condition. Batman, what's that? Catwoman, we run away to Europe together, sip tea in a cafe, and live happily ever after. Robin, holy unsatisfying ending. And then Catwoman, of course, we kill Robin. I think that's probably the best lines in the whole entire movie.
There was another reference to the Nolan movies, though. Like, when he turns evil, all of a sudden he's gone, and Commissioner Gordon and Robin is like, where'd he go? And they're like, that's not like him to just disappear while we're talking.
The artwork that Joker steals, the painting.
Yeah.
The reference to the mask that Heath Ledger wears.
Oh, really?
That was kind of their way of
homaging. You know, I didn't even notice that.
It was their way of homaging
that. That's pretty cool.
And I think there was also a couple of dark gray Batman suits when, you know,
Batman... I didn't notice that. I couldn't tell if that was my imagination or not.
I went back and paused it, and there were two black and gray Batman suits with huge...
There was one that looked like the Michael Keaton one, too, wasn't there, with the yellow...
They pretty much referenced or paid some sort of tribute to almost all the Batman movies out there in some form or fashion, but you just really had... You had to pay attention.
No.
Otherwise, you could miss them. I really thought, for what the movie was, I enjoyed it. And I'm not a big fan of the 60s Batman, but the fact that you were able to get Adam West and Burt Ward to come back and do this.
I like it a lot more now. I like it a lot more now than I used to. I think it's a pretty funny show.
Did you see what that camera operator did when they got to that fight scene in the studio with Batman?
Mm-hmm.
On the side of the camera, he flipped it to Dutch tilt for fight scene.
Yeah.
Because that's how they shot most of their things.
I saw that. That was pretty funny. It's pretty stupid. There's Svengoolie. He broadcasts out in Chicago, but we get him on
MeTV.
Yeah, here in Wichita, we get his stuff. On Saturdays, he has... Maybe it's not him that does this, but on MeTV, we have a lineup on Saturdays. It's Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Hulk, and Star Trek.
They changed it up recently because now, instead of Batman airing from 5 to 6, it's now Wild West.
Oh, really?
Ugh. And then it goes to Hulk.
I wonder why they did that.
Well, Batman now follows Svengoolie at 11 o'clock our time. So they still have Batman.
I know for a while that was like the coolest. Even though like Wonder Woman sucks, like that was kind of like the coolest lineup in a way.
Kind of like the superhero Saturday night thing.
Although like Batman kind of sucks too. But
yeah.
I do like the George Reeves Superman show. I mean, you have to have an open mind and realize that it's the 50s and for children. So it's a little bit corny, but it's a good show. The Wonder Woman show, you know, I really like her, but that show was just pretty bad.
It was also started one network set in World War II, and then it got canned. And
that's the problem, because actually the first season isn't bad. The one where she's fighting Nazis, like that's actually pretty good. But then when she's in modern times not fighting Nazis anymore, it gets pretty lame.
Well, that's because CBS picked it up, and because those period pieces are more expensive to produce, they switched it up and put it in.
Now, that doesn't mean
times.
The writing had to be so bad.
True.
I hear Shazam's pretty
Oh God,
pretty
I haven't
too.
Watched that in so long. As a kid, I thought that show was great. As a kid. Now, I could watch it as an adult and think, oh my God, what was I thinking?
No, I haven't seen Flash since I was a kid. That was a 90s show, I think. Or 80s, something like that.
Late 80s, early 90s. It was only on for one season.
I did, however, watch on YouTube the scene with fairly famous Flash villain called the Trickster, who's kind
Mark
of a Joker
Hamill.
Wannabe, and he's done by Mark Hamill.
Actually, Mark Hamill's reprised that on the newer CW, the Flash show. He's reprised that now two or three times now.
As the Trickster?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
I'm not sure exactly how they've worked that in, but yeah.
I need to watch. People say that's actually a pretty good show.
Yeah.
It's Flash and Green Arrow are the good shows, right?
Yeah, I think the Flash is kind of overtaking the Green Arrow as the better of the two shows, personally.
Isn't Supergirl supposed to be good, or is that one just kind of meh?
Actually, since they brought it over to CW and CW's kind of put their reins into it, I guess the second season on CW's kind of been a little bit of a soft reboot, but without completely retooling
it.
And I guess it's working. I never understood why CBS wanted to pick up Supergirl in the first place, because it didn't seem like their particular type of show they have on their lineup. But I'm glad they, instead of CBS just killing it, they decided, okay, we're not going to air it, but we're going to move it to the CW, which I thought that was a good thing, because I guess it did do well enough on CBS that it would have been a top-rated show on CW. So I'm glad they did keep it, although I have not watched any of the show. If it erases the bad Supergirl movie from the 80s, then hey, I'm all for that. Speaking of superheroes, this probably makes more sense to go to this next. I was going to do it last, but it kind of seems to flow more. David Ayer put out a message about his Suicide Squad movie and also addressing the Joker role. Some of you may have seen this, some of you may have not. I just wanted to address it because to me it kind of seems like obvious he kind of figured it out after the fact, but that's just me. He said the movie was wildly successful commercially and the world got introduced into some very cool characters in the DC universe, and that the success is due exactly to the wonder and power of DC, of its characters. Would I do a lot of things differently? Yep, for sure. Wish I had a time machine. I'd make the Joker the main villain and engineer a more grounded story. I have to take the good and the bad and learn from it. I love making movies and I love DC. I'm a high school dropout and used to paint houses for a living. I'm lucky to have the job I have. I have to give the characters the stories and plots they deserve next time. And no, there isn't a secret edit of the film with a bunch of Joker scenes hidden in a salt mine somewhere. I'm glad to see he realizes he should have done things differently.
Here's the deal with Suicide Squad. It was just a bad movie.
Right.
Like who cares? I mean, were any of these characters, other than maybe the Joker and Harley Quinn, were any of these characters that well beloved before this movie came out?
Probably not.
I mean, it was a bad movie. And the thing about David Ayer is, I don't know everything he's done, but I know he wrote the screenplay for Training Day, which is one of my favorite movies of all time. He's got talent. He made a bad movie. Move on. You know, I mean, right. And I'm not telling him to move on. I'm just saying, who cares? I'm going to be honest with you. This is probably the first, this is like one of the first big superhero movies that I have in a long time that I have no desire to own on any format or ever watch again.
Mm-hmm.
I say big. Fantastic Four was a little bit worse than this. Fantastic Four was a lot worse than this.
I was going to say.
I don't know. This movie reminded me of Fantastic Four a lot, though. It was real choppy and made no sense. And the end was just like a villain standing there and lights moving around. Like, that's something. Can we stop the pillar of light at the end? It used to be kind of cool. And now there's always just this ominous pillar of light that means doom over the city.
Okay. Okay, I get you now.
And I know there are some movies like Iron Man has it for like a split second. I'm not counting, and that's from the explosion. I'm not counting Iron Man, but I'm counting movies where Fantastic Four in this movie and Ghostbusters were like the three worst I've ever seen where there's just like a pillar of light. I shouldn't be so picky. Doctor Strange had it and I loved it. They did it right in Doctor Strange. At first I was, oh God, another pillar of light. I mean, really? I mean, what they do with it is so... They knew what they were doing. They knew that they were kind of putting that little cliche on edge where time reverses and all that. That was actually really cool. So
it's one thing if you got a good movie and you do it and you know, you kind of know you're doing it, but
it's one of those cheap tricks, right? That, and there's a lot of cheap tricks in a lot of movies, but this one's been prominent for a while. Yeah, I just, Suicide Squad, really, I just hated that movie. It's just really...
And yet Warner Brothers in its infinite wisdom plans on giving Harley her own spinoff movie. And I don't
There's
get that.
Potential there. She was really good.
Right. I guess if you make it a Harley
if you have
Joker
a good,
movie...
If you have a good script, she doesn't even need the Joker, honestly. Honestly, get rid of Jared Leto, for Christ's sake. I mean, in this movie, her and Will Smith had better chemistry than she did with Jared Leto.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Like, honestly, I'd like to see a movie with her and Deadshot.
Because in the comics, didn't they, those two kind of have a fling together?
I have no idea.
I think I read like that somewhere for a while that she was infatuated with Deadshot. And
really?
And had a relationship for a while.
Deadshot is one of those characters that I'm not... Like, I've always known who he is, but I've never been super... familiar with him. Like, I knew he was a Batman villain. I knew, like, he started off in the 50s, of course, he started off dressed like a cowboy or something stupid like that. But the thing that really gets me is those two were really good in this movie. This has actually really made me like Will Smith a lot better, because even with a terrible script and, like, a garbage movie, he's still really good.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it really says something about him as an actor these days. I would like to see both of them in another movie, but at the same time, part of me is just like, man, they're just beating this dead horse. Right. They might have to just call it quit. We've had three movies. Best one has been controversial, to say the least. And the worst one has been this one.
And I would say that 2017 will be a deciding factor for the DC Extended Universe. Wonder Woman and then Justice League both have to succeed better critically and financially than what the previous movies have done, or otherwise Warner Brothers is going to have to make a very big decision of continue down the path of people not liking
what
they're doing.
Well, this movie made a lot of money. I'm not going to get into it too much, but there's a lot of pandering in this movie, and I think that's part of the reason why it did so well. Like, it certainly reaches out to the same kind of crowd that used to rent crappy, really crappy sci-fi and horror movies mm-hmm. from the video store. It's the same crowd who watches those really crappy horror movies and sci-fi movies that have infested Netflix lately. Like I said, I don't want to get into it too much because, I mean, it's going to come off as rude, but I think this movie really, like, pandered to that. And that's why it made so much money, because it was not a good movie.
I think there was parts in there where it showed it could have been a great movie. Yeah. But as soon as you start getting to that point of, okay, this is going to finally start getting good, it'd go right back to what it
was. Once they go to the city of zombies, it's like, this is done. It's over. This is not interesting. It's not fun. It's just boring and stupid.
I'm still of the opinion the wrong character was used for the villain. So, and I think that has a lot to do with it too.
But. No, sure. Yeah. Like, that's what I thought this movie was going to be, was like,
the trailer gave you a sense that
where the government forces them to take down the Joker's gang or right. something like that. That's what it seemed like. Right. And it's like, nope, it's really stupid.
And the Joker doesn't have any more screen time than what he did in the trailer. They gave you an impression of one movie and they gave you something completely different. And if the Joker had been the villain, you know, this movie could have been a lot better.
This movie had a plot or a script, it could have been a lot better. I mean, it's a bad movie with a couple really good actors who do a good job. Mm-hmm. That's all I can say about it.
And there are people out there, though, who really like the movie. So, and I don't
Yeah, think they're the same people who Killer Beavers or whatever on Netflix is good.
Have you seen that poster for that? Have you seen what the poster of that looks like?
Yes.
It's so...
I started watching the movie. I gotta say, like, it has Bill Burr at the beginning, who Bill Burr's, like, one of my favorite comedians. I have this thing where I feel like people don't know the difference between a movie that's so bad that it's good and some cynical piece of crap. A movie that's so bad it's good is like Plan 9 from Outer Space, where it's, like, made by... Or The Room. It's made by, like, some crazy idiot who thinks he's making a good movie.
Right.
Like, that's what that is. Whereas movies like the Beaver movie or Sharknado, those are movies made by, like, jerks just crunching away. And those type of movies can still be good. Mel Brooks used to do movies like that all the time, mm-hmm. and they were good. But the writing has to be there to make it good, and it's not there. That's my rant.
The Killer Beavers, I mean, hell, the poster alone got me to post the poster on my Facebook page. So
I started to watch it, but I will say, Bill Burr's really funny, but the more I watch it, I was like, he's not even, like, that funny in this movie, so it's not even worth it. Did you ever watch Breaking Bad?
No, I did not.
He was one of the lawyers' hired goons, and they'd always come in to rough someone up, but they'd always mess up horribly. It's really funny.
As we were talking about earlier in the podcast, obviously everyone's very well aware that Carrie Fisher died on December 27th. And as I mentioned, I made a little addition to our last podcast because, as I said, I was about to put it out and then she died. And I kind of made some modifications to it before I posted it. She died from the result of a heart attack on January 13th. Since it's been a while since our last mm-hmm. podcast, Disney and Lucasfilm did something they don't normally do, and that's address rumors and speculation. On a normal basis, you know, the rumors and speculation they hear all the time, oh, is this character going to be in the movie, or is this character dying, or what's the name of this title? And they don't address those because they want everyone like you and I to talk about it. It just draws interest in their franchise, which I get. But in this particular case, they responded because everyone was talking, well, now that she's died, and if you've seen Rogue One, spoiler alert, there is a digital character of Grand Moff Tarkin because Peter Cushing, who played him in A New Hope, is no longer around. He hasn't been
for a long time.
He died in 1994, but everyone was speculating because Carrie Fisher in Episode 8, which they've already filmed, and it's being edited, obviously. We're still going to get to see her as General Organa at least one more time, but a lot of speculation was because of Episode 9, her role was supposed to increase even again because of the connection with her being the mother of Kylo Ren and Luke. I think Episode 9 is going to be a culmination of the Skywalker story, I think, personally, you know, to wrap it up so they can move on.
They're
going to
have
things.
To write in that she died, though.
Well, here's the thing. There's a lot of...
Unless they have footage for her to be in Episode 9.
I don't know about that, but Lucasfilm and Disney said, quote, "We don't normally respond to fan or press speculation, but there is a rumor circulating that we would like to address. We want to assure our fans that Lucasfilm has no plans to digitally recreate Carrie Fisher's performance as Princess and or General Leia Organa. Carrie Fisher was... is and always will be a part of the Lucasfilm family. She was our princess, our general, and more importantly, our friend. We are still hurting from her loss. We cherish her memory and legacy as Princess Leia and will always strive to honor everything she gave to Star Wars." And I thought that was very nicely done, and saying any chances of us digitally recreating her will not happen, which I thought that was... the smart thing to do.
It's the right thing to do.
It's the right thing to do. Now, my big question, and I've heard this addressed on other podcasts.
I mean, it's weird that they did it with Peter Cushing, but I guess it's been long enough.
It's been long enough. Peter Cushing's character of Grand Moff Tarkin really wasn't a main character, yeah, if you want to say, but for what they did put him in there, it kind of served their purpose to move the storyline, because sure, if you didn't have Tarkin in there, it'd be like kind of a little weird. Well, how does he end up on the Death Star then for A New Hope? So I get that. Even though they've come out and said they won't digitally recreate her, they have not said, or have not, at least in my mind, they won't necessarily recast. If her role is supposed to be that much more increased in episode 9 than what it was in episode 8, does that become a necessary issue that you have to look at to in order to serve the story for the movie? I mean, we've had other movies where characters have been recast, sure, before. The original Dumbledore, after the first two Harry Potters died, they recast with someone else for the last 5. Everyone seemed to be okay with it. I mean, they constantly recast for James Bond, even though those actors have not died, but they've moved on from that role. I'm of the opinion, I don't think I'd like it. I don't think I'd like seeing someone else playing her role. But if trying to rewrite her out of episode 9 becomes more of a problem for the movie than just recasting for the part, then I think recasting almost becomes what you almost have to do to serve their story.
Well, first off, I want to say recasting her is still, I think, better than digitally reanimating her.
Right.
It's too soon for that. However, I also think it's too soon to recast her. This is a little different than Dumbledore. I mean, this is like after George Harrison died, if they were like, hey, let's bring back the Beatles, but we're going to have a new cast for George Harrison and John Lennon. I mean, we're going to have new guys for that. And not just like, we're the Beatles and these are our new guys in our band. It's like, no, they are the Beatles. We're putting on the mop tops and everything. Mm-hmm. It would be pretty messed up. Like, I think it's a little too soon. Honestly, I don't think it's going to be that hard to write in that her character has died. She is an old lady on the movie. They could easily show footage of her floating in the Force or whatever. I don't know.
Well, one question that I read that was brought up basically said, how does episode 8 end?
Yeah.
End with her character and in what position her character's in? If they're leaving you hanging on whatever and she's still there at the end of the movie and you see her last shot because of whatever with Luke and Rey or whatever the case may be, and okay, now what's going to happen in episode 9? And then all of a sudden in the crawl, X amount of times, bone through, she's now died. Would that be more of a disservice to the fans than recast?
You know, I don't really see that being too much of an issue, because while these movies are still about Luke, Leia, and Han, it's kind of about them passing on the torch.
Right.
They're not the main characters anymore. I don't think that's going to be too much of an issue. And I mean, as far as, I don't think the opening crawl is just going to begin with Leia's dead. I don't think that's going to be in an opening crawl at all. I think it's going to be like on Return of the Jedi, or, you know, at the end when he goes to visit Yoda and Yoda's dead. I mean, it'll be a little different because they'll have to get the call. I think it's going to be like on Star Trek Beyond. It's going to be like that, where, remember when young Spock got a call that old Spock had died?
Right.
I think it's going to be like that. I think that's the way they're going to have to do it. Luke feels something in the Force.
I'm more of the opinion of, if recasting becomes necessary to keep what they had in plan, because the guy who's directing episode 8, Rian Johnson, also wrote episode 8, and he's also writing episode 9. And from my understanding is, what they wrote in episode 8, they already have a pretty good structure outline of, sure, what they were wanting to do with episode 9, tying all this together. And as I said, I wouldn't necessarily want to see anyone recast and be put in her role, but if they did it just for the one movie and it wraps up her storyline, at least good enough where you don't have to ever see her character again, then I'm okay with it, so long as you found the right actress and maybe even somewhat of a little bit unknown actress to play the part, then I'm okay with it. But I would not be okay with A, digitally recreating her, or B, just find some cheap way out saying, oh, well, this happened and she died.
I don't really see that being too much of an issue, though.
But
like I said, these characters aren't at the forefront anymore. I think even if they already have written her for episode 9, which I don't believe they have, if there's one thing that's true about Star Wars, don't ever believe that they have written the next story,
because
they never have. But even if they did, I think that her role would be tangible and I don't want to say small, but tangible enough that they can change it and work around it. I don't think it would be that much of an issue to give her the memorial that she deserves in a movie. I think that would be fine. Who's to say that they didn't write her to die anyway? Wouldn't that be weird?
Well, no, because Rian Johnson, director of Episode 8, said he was now going to have to sit down with Kathleen Kennedy and the head of the story group of Lucasfilm and Disney to figure out what they were going to do for Episode 9, because they already knew what they had planned to do with her character for Episode 9, and it was an increase in her role from what Episode 8 was, which was an increase from Episode 7. So they already had this whole thing plotted out, at least knowing where they were wanting to go with this. Whether the script has been written or not is another story, but they definitely knew where they were going with this, how much of a role Luke and Leia was going to have as they moved on with this. So they obviously have some idea where this was ending.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of, can they figure out a way of reworking Episode 9 if they decide or choose to rework it Episode 9 in some form
or fashion. If Kylo Ren wasn't already on the verge of the dark side, what would send him over the edge other than his mother dying? Because he seemed to be, while he hated his father, he seemed to love his mother very much.
Well, see, and that's what makes me think that in Episode 9, when they say she had even a larger role in Episode 9 than she does in Episode 8, it makes me think that the demise of Kylo Ren in some form or fashion is going to come down. Not necessarily, yes, Rey will have something to do with it, and possibly even Luke, depending on what they decide to do with his character by the end of Episode 8. But also, I think Leia was going to have a part in that as well. And I wouldn't have been surprised if maybe, you know, she's the one who ends up having to kill her own son. You know, maybe that's something they had in mind. Well, I don't know, but I'm just saying.
Like, we've all
speculated.
Well, we've all pretty much figured out already, I think, that Rey is his sister. Rey is Leia's daughter. We've already kind of figured that out.
I don't think Rey would be Han's and Han and Leia's daughter, because how would you not
could
know?
It could be Luke's daughter, but I mean, come on.
There's enough theories out there. The bigger theory right now that everyone seems to be more believing right now, even some of the more staunch Star Wars fanatics, I don't want to say fanatics, but they've dismissed a lot of the theories, but they seem to be thinking that she's going to have something to do with something of Kenobi's past, and not necessarily Luke's daughter. She may be tied somehow into whatever, but not necessarily directly. Hopefully they answer that in 8.
That would be impossible, because she's younger than Kylo Ren.
Right.
And Obi-Wan died.
Granddaughter is what they're talking about. Because Clone Wars, they did allude to a relationship Kenobi had with someone from the Mandalorian planet, the queen or whatever it was, and he was kind of smitten with her. And since that's technically part of the canon, there's speculation somehow being connected that, you know, Obi-Wan wasn't as faithful to the Jedi as, but he didn't necessarily let it consume him like Anakin did with
Padme. That'd be interesting. Although she does seem to be pretty powerful with the Force.
Right.
That seems to be more of a Skywalker trait.
But it also wouldn't surprise me if they also went with Kenobi either.
But then again, like, who's to say that we might be writing a better movie than what's coming out, but who's to say that, like,
wow,
you know, when she does all that crazy Force stuff out of nowhere that everyone has a problem with, I felt like, who's to say that Luke isn't helping her doing that right then? That's true. What I've always felt, because I mean, you got to remember, Darth Vader was so powerful on, if you remember Empire Strikes Back, Darth Vader is telepathically communicating with Luke through space.
Yeah.
And that seems like, I don't know if anyone else does that ever in the movies. Maybe they do, but actually communicating through space.
Well, that's kind of
like, and then if you look at the,
that's kind of like with Obi-Wan though at the end of New Hope look with
at
the, Luke.
Yeah, but Obi-Wan's dead at the end. Like, he's something else at this point. But if you look at unused scenes from Return of the Jedi, which if you've ever watched those, that would have been like the best movie ever if they would have worked these scenes in. Like, they're real dark.
Luke creating the lightsaber in the cave.
And they're real dark.
Tatooine,
and remember, Darth Vader is taunting him telepathically. He's talking to him and he's like, I'm looking for you, and taunting him.
Yeah.
They're on two other planets across the galaxy in different solar systems at this point. So, I mean, he's really powerful. So who's to say Luke hasn't figured out that same power to transmit? And he does, because he does talk to her. You do hear his voice when she picks up his lightsaber.
You also technically hear Qui-Gon, Yoda's, and Obi-Wan's, too.
Yeah, but they're all dead.
Right.
Like, they're something else. They're not crude matter at this point. They can do these things, but Luke is still crude matter. He's still alive. He can do that. Who's to say he wasn't helping her? And probably, actually, the other ghosts were probably helping her, too, at that point, because she had that lightsaber. I don't know. It's all a bunch of, I mean, Star Wars is stupid. It's like, I love Star Wars, but I mean, it makes no sense when you think about it. I love it, but yeah.
Just one of those things, and it will be
interesting. And I mean, since day one, George Lucas has like made this, pulled this crap out of his ass. I know when I was a kid, I always believed his line that he had everything planned out, and then you find out, no, he did not. Even the fact that Darth Vader is Luke's father, that was not originally part of the plan. In the original movie, Anakin Skywalker and Darth Vader are two different people. Well, like, watch that movie. Nowhere in George Lucas's mind or anyone else's had they even thought that Darth Vader was going to be Anakin Skywalker. That's why it was such a surprise, because they literally made it up on the spot.
And his original scripts for Star Wars, Luke's wasn't Skywalker, it was Luke Starkiller.
Well, yeah. That's why Darth Vader being his father was such a surprise to everyone, because they literally made it up right at that moment. And it's like, whoa. If you watch the first one, it really doesn't work. Don't get me wrong, I love it, but you watch the first one, and I always feel like, nope, he's not his father on this one. He's just a...
farm boy from Tatooine.
Darth Vader's just a renegade...
evil person.
He's just Obi-Wan's disciple that turned on him.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, especially like Leia being the other kid. It's like, no, he totally made that up on Return of the Jedi, because...
Well, towards the end of Empire.
Well, that's the thing, though. They didn't know... At the end, when Yoda says...
There is another.
They just put that line in to, like, bait people into coming into the third one. And so when they were like, oh, shoot, there's another. Another what? Let's make Leia his sister. She made out with him pretty hard on the last movie, but whatever. If you watch Empire Strikes Back, again, there is absolutely no way that they are brother and sister. No way whatsoever. And then, of course, you have Phantom Menace, where it... Okay, so now you're telling me Darth Vader built C-3PO? I'm sorry, but you gotta stop making up stuff as you go. The other stuff, kind of stupid. Darth Vader being the father, cool. Leia being the sister, kind of stupid, but I can deal with it. C-3PO being built by Darth Vader? No, I'm sorry. That makes no sense.
Well, that's the reason why he has to have his mind wipe at the end of episode 3.
Yeah. They don't wipe R2-D2s, though.
No, they don't. Or at least they don't.
Which still leaves kind of a plot hole in a way. These movies are filled with plot holes.
Then again, I'm sure you could find plot holes with any major franchise as they go along.
My favorite plot hole is Jurassic Park, where it's the best scene in the movie where the T-Rex just broke out and he's attacking the kids in the car. I watched it in theaters a few years ago when it came out, and I forgot. Like, that's a really scary scene. But the best part, though, is he pushes the car, and all of a sudden he's pushing it into the same fence where he just walked out of, and all of a sudden there's a giant 100-foot pit there. What, did the T-Rex just, like, float over here? This makes no sense. And then there's another one, again involving the T-Rex, where symbolically the greatest image in the movie, where after the T-Rex kills the velociraptors and then the banner flies down, you know? A, how the hell did he get in the building? And B, how did they not see him? Because if you remember, Grant looks to the left and there's a velociraptor. Then he looks to the right and there's a velociraptor. All of a sudden, the T-Rex just eats it. And it's like, I get that we, as the audience, can't see what's over there, but they certainly can see this 30-foot monster.
Right.
Makes no sense.
Actually, the first few times I watched Jurassic Park, I didn't really catch the fact T-Rex walks past.
When you do catch it, though, you can't because it's
probably one of the best scenes in the movie.
Yeah. If they would have just not ended it so stupid, it does kind of bother you.
Maybe it were it sloped and it was more of a hill and he kind of walked up rather than just a drop off. But yeah, but once you do notice it and you do pick up on it, you can't unnotice it. And it's always there.
For a movie that I like so much, that's really like one of the worst plot holes I've ever seen in a movie. Pretty bad. Although, The Dark Knight Rises has a good plot hole.
You think about Jurassic Park, though. Ellie, when she runs out where the circuit breakers are, she shuts the door, and there's only supposed to be three around. Mm-hmm. She leaves one shut up door in the shed, and she runs out and she finds Grant. Well, then
there's two in the building. One gets locked in the freezer.
So how is there still two at the end chasing them down? Unless the other one figured out how to break the window and reach out and undo the lock to get out of the freezer, or the other one got out.
The other one might have
gotten out.
Yeah.
Because they don't really show her locking the door, but you still wonder, okay, one's for sure locked
in
the freezer.
Well, that one, it is that one, because remember, it shows him walking in the building from the outside, I guess. Well, no.
No, they don't really show where it came from.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
There for a while, it's just the one that harasses them when they're in the thing trying to get the computer to reboot all the systems, and then that one follows them down, but then the second one just appears out of nowhere. Empire.
It's a really emotionally effective movie because the special effects are so good.
You get so wrapped up in what's going on.
And the camera's so good. But yeah, like, logically, it makes no sense.
You don't think about where they left all the velociraptors at and what they did with them.
And it's one of my favorite movies, but it is like really just a plot hole filled movie. The Dark Knight, I don't know if this is a plot hole, but it's a really dumb thing that they could have saved everyone. When the CIA takes off Bane's mask in the plane, why doesn't he just fucking shoot Bane right there?
Oh, Dark Knight Rises? Yeah.
Like, I was thinking about that the other day. Dude, they're like in a plane and they just caught the number one terrorist they're looking for. Fucking shoot him. Yeah, they'd probably still get killed by terrorists, but Bane's dead. Do you think if the CIA caught Osama bin Laden, they'd let him talk first? No.
Well, also, is it Dark Knight or Dark Knight Rises?
Dark Knight actually has a lot of plot holes.
Dark Knight Rises, they advance it, what, by 8 to 10 years after supposedly end of Dark Knight?
I don't know why
I read somewhere where, how does Bruce Wayne, even though he stepped away from running his company on a day-to-day basis, supposedly, how does he not know that all of his money has been drained out of his company and his personal bank account to end up being broke? That's another one of those kind
of
like...
There's a lot of things. I can write that off as him being so crazy and depressed that he's just out of his mind.
He just don't care.
Yeah, I can write that one off. The Dark Knight, actually, when you think about it, how the hell does Joker know everything that's going on? Because there are things that he does where he would only know if he had actually read the script of the movie. It's really crazy. Well, that's such a good movie that you don't care.
He was able to figure some things out because he had cops that were still tipping him off, though.
Yeah.
So that's the reason why he knew where Bruce Wayne's penthouse was, crashed the party, and
it's pretty amazing that he already had crooked cops ready to take in Dent and
Rachel
when he still thought Dent was Batman. Unless he had an ace in the hole and thought maybe he's not Batman, but he had no reason to think that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy. It seemed like there was something else where it's like, that really, like, how the hell would he know to do that? Like, how the hell did he know that by killing his girlfriend and burning his face off, half his face off, Dent would go insane? That's one of my favorite scenes when he's in the hospital and he put that gun in Dent's hand and puts it to his forehead.
Uh-huh.
I really think that he's ready for Dent to kill him, just to prove his crazy point. I don't think that he has an ace up his sleeve for that one. I think that is the ace up his sleeve, is that, remember when Batman throws him out of the window at the end, how he's laughing the whole time? I love that. I don't know why we're talking about the movie that everyone talks about all the time and has for 8 years, but
yeah,
it's a really good movie. I'm sorry.
It's one of the best superhero movies ever put out there.
It's the best.
Yeah.
I love the first two Spider-Man movies. I love Iron Man.
The Captain America
movies have been good. There are movies that have come close, but none of them have been better, in my opinion. They've come close. They've come real close, and they've all gotten really good. I can't wait for Logan.
Oh, that should be awesome. That's
You don't know.
Although
it's an X-Men movie, so it could go either way.
Speaking of Logan, though, Hugh Jackman did come out and said that this particular Logan is not set in the same timelines as the previous X-Men movies. Which, knowing Fox, is like, it doesn't surprise me. But then again, I think they've written the story to serve their purpose to write Hugh Jackman off as Wolverine one last time. And if the movie looks as good as it seems like it could be, then I don't think everyone's going to really care or give a crap as far as that goes. So the last trailer they put out looked really good with the, you saw more of X-23, the girl kicking ass. It seems like that's going to be...
I didn't see the last trailer. Is it playing Johnny Cash's Hurt?
No, it's not.
Then I don't want to see it.
No, but
that was like such a perfect music.
But it shows a lot more what's going on, and you can definitely tell this movie is going to have plenty of action, blood, and I think you're going to need some tissues.
I'll give you $5 if you can name who did that song originally before Johnny Cash.
You told me once. I want to say Nine Inch Nails, but I don't think that's right.
No, yeah, I owe you $5. I know we're not on camera, but I'm giving you $5. There you go.
I'll take a photograph of it and post it.
That was one of my favorite songs when I was a kid. And
see, I'm not a Nine Inch Nails
fan. Then I heard Johnny Cash's version. I was like, oh my gosh, it's really good. That was my favorite Nine Inch Nails song, actually. But then I heard the way he did it, and I was like, man, it's an amazing song.
Kind of start wrapping this up here. What grade would you give Return of the Caped Crusader?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it was a fun cartoon. I don't know if
I could give it a grade.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's worth watching. It might be worth, if you're a Batman fan, it's definitely worth watching. If you're a...
If you're a fan of the 60s
show. If you're a fan of the 60s show, it's worth buying, actually. And I might end up buying it. So, okay, I'm going to go ahead and grade it B+.
Yeah.
It's actually, it might be better than any episode of the 60s show.
And speaking of which,
what's great is if it really, like, it pretty much is just an episode of the show. Like,
right.
We brought them back, but since they're so old, we just animate them. That's like how we do it. And it works just fine.
Speaking of that, I almost forgot, there will be a sequel to this movie.
That, I'm actually really happy about that.
Due out sometime this year in 2017, and it will feature the voice of William Shatner as the voice of Two-Face.
Nice.
As the main antagonist, although it's not been fully confirmed, but they think the story is going to be based on that unproduced script, which caused them to create that one comic. And
actually, that segues into...
Forgot about that, so thank you.
That's actually good. That segues into what I'm going to do on my next show, which is I have that comic, and it talks about that script. I didn't have anything prepared today, but I know what I'm doing for the next show, and it's going to be that. And it's really interesting. Two-Face is by far one of my favorite Batman villains, and it was always odd to me that he was never in the show. I kind of felt like maybe it's because he was too scary, but
they probably didn't know what to do with him.
Yeah.
Or how to go about it without,
because I mean, in a way, he's a perfect villain for the show. He's got some goofy gimmick,
right?
Like, he's got the coin and the duality.
Nowadays you could put a Two-Face,
but he might have been too scary for the show.
For nowadays, you could put a Two-Face and do a scary makeup, and most people or most audiences would accept it and not have a problem. Back in the 1960s, that probably a little bit different.
That's what I'm thinking.
What you can do, just paint them a different color, but then if you do that, you're just no more mimicking than those one set of characters off an episode of Star Trek, the original series, where you got white on one side, black on the other. I can see why they avoided him.
Yeah. No, I can too. But they had a script and everything for it. One of the actors that was slated to play him was actually Clint Eastwood.
My guess is that show would have gotten a fourth season. They might have finally addressed Two-Face, but
probably.
And I imagine that's probably where that unproduced script came from.
I mean, we got King Tut. What more can you ask for?
Plenty going on in the movies this year. Our next podcast here on Rich Take will either be...
There's going to be Thor Ragnarok. Is that this year?
Yes,
Ragnarok. That's pretty exciting.
Wonder Woman, Justice League, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Plenty of superhero
movies. Oh, yeah. Guardians of the Galaxy is going to be great.
Plenty of superhero movies coming out, plus Logan.
Now, we're going to see with Guardians of the Galaxy 2, we're going to see something that we haven't been able to see yet in these Marvel movies. And that is whether or not the director does the sequel and he succeeds in making it better than the original. Uh-huh. That hasn't happened yet. You look at...
Iron Man 2.
Iron Man 2.
Then again, with Iron Man 2, they tried to set up the entire rest of the Marvel universe.
What's his name? Who did Iron Man 2?
Jon Favreau.
Jon Favreau.
Did both.
So you've got Jon Favreau. Iron Man 2 is not as good as Iron Man 1. Kenneth Branagh left right after Thor.
He didn't do the second one.
Joss Whedon. Age of Ultron isn't as good as Avengers.
No.
I like Age of Ultron, but it's not as good as the Avengers. Edgar Wright didn't even finish making his first one. He was done. To be fair, that was 10 years in the making. I don't blame him at all for leaving.
Okay, let's say James Gunn comes out with Guardians Volume 2 and it's a smash and takes in more money than the first one. Is there a chance Marvel brings him back to do the third one?
You know what? I am missing one. Captain America. While the first one was done by the second one and the third one are done by the Russo brothers. It's a little different, but... So we have been able to see somebody do a movie just as good once. I know technically it's like, well, Winter Soldier might be better than Civil War, but it's like they're neck and neck. Like, it's really hard to pick one. It really is.
Winter Soldier's more of a true sequel of a Captain America movie, where Civil War, yes, is technically considered the third Captain America movie, but you have so many of the other that are brought into that movie, plus introducing Spider-Man to the MCU. You really have this convoluted, almost, as they jokingly said, Avengers 2.5 in a certain sense. So really, you have Captain America, and then right below him is basically Iron Man, as far as the two main characters they follow the most. And Iron Man is almost as in that as just as much as Captain America. And I really think in some ways, Civil War is also kind of the fourth Iron Man movie people have always been wanting out of Robert Downey Jr. But since he won't necessarily say, I'm willing to do a fourth one, and Marvel seems to have no plans to do a fourth one, I think that was kind of both the studio's way and the actor's way of saying, yeah, okay, I'll do Civil War. And his way of saying, yeah, you get more Iron Man, but yeah, it's not necessarily a sequel to Iron Man at the same time. So
it's really interesting how I've noticed it seems like with these Marvel movies, they're able to, if there was a movie, and by the way, they do not have... I know I picked on Iron Man 2 and Age of Ultron a little bit. They do not have a bad movie at all in this series.
No.
They're all really good. I'm going to say the worst one might be Incredible Hulk, which sort of doesn't count because that one was really still a Universal movie. It was supposed to be, very much supposed to be a sequel to Ang Lee's Hulk,
right,
which if you watch that movie, he starts off in Brazil where he ended off in an Ang Lee's Hulk. Like, it's basically a sequel.
And the only really tie in that into the MCU is by them bringing Stark in at the end to talk to the general.
Yeah, and
that's the only really tie in you get to the MCU.
You know, if that's the worst one, if that or Iron Man 2 are the worst ones, then that's a really good series, because those movies are pretty darn good.
At some point, we really ought to take either one or two part a podcast and just go through and rank the Marvel movies.
You know what? I've thought about that recently. I don't even want to rank them anymore, because honestly, I don't think I can. I mean, they've all been really good, and they've all been different enough. I can rank them in tiers. Top tier would probably be like Iron Man and Winter Soldier and Avengers. Then you've got tier 2, tier 3, tier 4 would probably be Iron Man 2, Incredible Hulk, and Thor 2. Tier 3 would probably be, I don't know, Hulk and Age of Ultron. Thor and Age of Ultron, maybe? I don't know.
I don't know.
Even that's hard to rank, even in tiers.
Definitely the standout as far as individual, if you want to call it individual franchises, and amongst the entire franchise, I say Captain America is probably the best of the...
Yeah, all three of those movies are pretty good. They really are. I mean, Iron Man, the first Iron Man is probably still my favorite out of all. I don't know. I'm going to have to rewatch it. You know, it's a very different time. Mm-hmm. Like when that came out. Now everything's so big.
I hate to do this, but Marvel with Iron Man did, whether they had an inkling of trying to start a franchise off of that or see where it goes, they started off, they picked a character, they made a movie, they made it to the best that they could, they put it out, it succeeded, and then they kind of tried to build from there instead of jumping into the middle of the pot as Warner Brothers has.
Yeah, no, and, absolutely.
And instead of focusing on Man of Steel and then doing just a second Man of Steel movie and then maybe giving you the Wonder Woman movie and then bringing in a Batman movie.
They are kind of damned if they do, damned if they don't. Because, yeah, it's like they would definitely be ripping off Marvel in. But it's like, it's not like they aren't ripping them off already. Like, right, they're building a universe. Marvel is the one that built the universe. Now everything does.
It's
like
a franchise.
And, you know, who cares if they're ripping them off? DC and Marvel have been ripping each other off for 70 years. Just go with it. You don't have to, like, and I hate how they act like they're so edgy. They're not edgy.
Supposedly Warner Brothers is changing. Wonder Woman was too late to change, but supposedly they're changing the tone for, they changed the tone for the Justice League and any of the future movies. So to me,
it Wonder Woman like... has potential, but I'm worried. You know, yeah, Batman and Superman sucked, but the one that really irked me was actually kind of Suicide Squad, because that one should have just been a decent movie. Like, it shouldn't have been a great movie, but it should have just been
a movie
to get them going. Yeah. And it wasn't. It was just dumb.
As I was going to say, most likely our next podcast here in Retro's Take will be either a review of John Wick 2 or the Lego Batman movie. I can promise you it will not be 50 Shades Darker. That series,
too bad.
That series will not be touched, forgive the pun, on this podcast. There's plenty of movies ahead for this year to talk about. I'm sure we'll have other things we'll come across for 2017.
Star Wars 8 coming out?
December, just like always. And even though the Han Solo movie is still technically scheduled for May of 2018, my guess is...
mixed feelings around that.
My guess is they're going to move that also to December. I mean, why not? The last two Decembers has been cash gold for them on Star Wars, so why not move it?
This movie's going to be called The Last Jedi.
The Last Jedi for Episode 8, which
kind
is...
kind of a boring title.
By Lucasfilm saying... Episode 8 is going to be called The Last Jedi, at least for me, interpretation is saying this movie is A, definitely focused on Luke. You kind of got the Han movie a little bit in Force Awakens. Of the three originals, Han was one focused on of the big three. So now you got this one. Han obviously can't come back because Kylo offed him. Now you're going to get more, I think, Luke with Rey in this one. And I think The Last Jedi basically refers either A, to just Luke or Luke and Rey, depending on how you want to look at it. I have no problems with the title.
Yeah, I don't either.
I mean, it's better than Attack of the Clones. Nah. So,
especially since the clones don't attack in that movie. They're good guys.
Yeah, it's the attack of the Separatists, maybe, but not Attack of the Clones. But
I guess. I don't know what that movie's about.
They're trying to set it's up the Clone Wars.
It's got Count Dracula in it. Yeah. It's something.
James, I thank you for coming back as first official podcast, as official co-host.
Wow. Yeah.
You're no longer considered a guest. Congratulations. Any last final thoughts?
I don't think so.
All right. Well, you can find any links to the True Believers for James on my website, RachelTate.com. You can also find my podcast and links to my Facebook and Twitter page also on RachelTate.com. You can also find my podcast on Podomatic now. That's a cool place to upload your podcast. If you've ever considered possibly launching a podcast, that'd be a place to start putting them. Thanks, James. We will talk to all you guys later.